Then I will work here. And my first time visiting KITP was in 2009, and I'm glad to see the rapid development of PI here, and also glad to see many old friends and also new friends here. So today I would like to introduce this new class of states, so the so-called tensor product states. And its application in the strongly correlated system. So the main part of the work is in collaborated with Professor Xiaogang Wen, and also involve lots of other people from different places. As we know, the HITC discovered in 1980s is one of the most important discoveries in last century. And the physics, basically people believe, can be described by the Hubbard model in the strong coupling limit. And in that case, actually, we can reduce the Hubbard model to this very famous TJ model, first proposed by Fu Chen and Tim Rice in 1988. So basically, this is a very simple model describes the electron hopping on a square lattice. But the electron is not the usual electron operator. It's some electron operator defined in the no double occupancy constrained space. So it means there's either spin up or spin down electron states or vacuum. So there's no both up and down states. So this model, the second term just usually Heisenberg coupling. But even such a simple model, it's very hard to solve due to this highly non-trivial no double occupancy space constraint. And people believe this model can capture the main physics for the very rich high TC phase diagram, because at half filling the model go back to this Heisenberg model and have this anti-ferromagnetic ordering. And after finite doping, first proposed by Anderson's famous conjecture about this RVB picture, we expect there can be high temperature superconductivity developed in this finite doping region. And at finite temperature, there are also some pseudo gap phase and some strange matter phase. And in the very overdoped region, we can recover this Fermi liquid phase. So basically, roughly speaking, this model can be described by a doped model insulators, because at half filling, due to the splitting of this low Hubbard band and the upper Hubbard band, basically we get a model insulator, have this anti-ferromagnetic ordering. And then when we dope the system, we expect there should be superconductivity developed. But this model was proposed 20 years ago, but so far there are still no any good method to solve such kind of non-trivial strong interacting system. Today, we want to talk about a little bit different model, which is also the TJ model, but defined on this honeycomb lattice. So the reason why we want to study such kind of model basically motivated by the following reasons. So first, we want to ask whether it's a superconductor. And second, if it is a superconductor, what kind of pairing pattern will exist in such kind of honeycomb lattice? And the second is the most famous paper recently proposed on, published on Nature, which proposed there may be possible spin liquid phase exist in the Hubbard model on honeycomb lattice at half filling in the intermediate coupling limit. And finally, I will also talk possible experimental realization for this honeycomb lattice TJ model or honeycomb lattice Hubbard model in the strong coupling limit. And the method we want to use today is tensor product states. I will give you some brief introduction. What is the tensor product states and why we need such kind of states to understand the strongly correlated physics in certain systems. Okay, so, yeah, it's just, you know, the TJ model basically, if U equal to zero, if you have a Hubbard model on the, with the limit U, Hubbard U equal to zero, then it's the simple graphing, right? But if you turn on this U, the U, large U limit, you get this TJ model. Yeah, so basically, you can imagine that in the graphing, if you can introduce this strong on-site repulsion between spin up and spin down electrons, then you can have the physics here. Yeah. Okay, so first I will introduce what is the tensor product state, then introduce this novel algorithm that can efficiently simulate physical quantities for such kind of states. And later I will show you some applications on spin system and convince you that it's actually very successful for large class of spin systems. And then I will generalize the method to handle Fermionic system. Finally give you the non-trivial application on this honeycomb lattice and the summary and the conclusion. Okay, so for the first part, as we know, for many years, the Landau's paradigm of symmetry breaking phase and phase transitions can understand many novel condensed matter phenomena. So the first simple example is this very famous Bose-Einstein condensation. I think realized in later last century. Another example is that in this usually magnetic order systems, so we already know this, like the disk in our computer, we know that we can use such kind of ordered magnetic system to encode some informations. And basically, this system can be understood roughly by some certain order parameter. So in this kind of disorder phase, the order parameter is zero. But in this ordered phase, have a non-zero expectation value. And another foundation is that based on the so-called Fermi-liquid theory. So the Fermi-liquid theory also very simple. We just assume that the electron almost free. There's no interaction. So if we have sequence of energy level, the electron, because of the Pauli exclusion principle, just fill up the free levels. So based on such kind of picture, we can understand many novel phenomena, including this matter, semiconductor, and band insulators, and also this integer quantum Hall effect, as well as the recent very hot topic, this topological insulators. And if we combine the symmetry breaking and this energy level filling picture, we can also understand the traditional BCS superconductivity. So the basic mathematical framework is also very simple. For instance, for this symmetry breaking phase, basically we can just assume there's a very simple underlying variational wave function. So assume we study this spin up and spin down system, spin one half system on a lattice. So I is the lattice site. Okay, then we assume there's all the parameter U down describe the amplitude of spin up configuration, and U up describe the amplitude of down, U down describe the amplitude of down configuration. And then the whole wave function just a very simple direct product of this local wave function on each side. Then we can just simply minimize the energy, and we can find the various symmetry breaking orders. So this is just a very simple practice for undergraduate course. Okay, then a little bit complicated description for this electron filling system actually also can be viewed as based on some universal wave function. So the wave function in the most generic case can have this pairing form. So for instance here, I still use the example for spinless electron. In this case, this Uij is some anti-symmetric matrix because this anti-commutation relation between C dike and CG dike. So after some orthogonal transformation, you can diagonalize the wave function in this form. And later, by introducing these quasi particles, these quasi particles still satisfy this fermion commutation relations and have the same quantum number as usual fermion. So this quasi particle, we call this Landau quasi particle. And in the quasi particle picture, we can transform this wave function back to this very simple free fermion picture because we just field the quasi particle on different quasi particle levels. So this wave function basically is a unification of superconductor and a free electron system. Okay, but during the 1980s, such kind of pictures was break down because the first discovery of fractional quantum Hall effect. So basically, the first wave function proposed by Laughlin is this very simple, for example, the one-third Laughlin set, which is an analytic function that's defined in two-dimensional system. And it turns out such kind of wave function is very far from this symmetry breaking state and the electron feeling picture, because in such a kind of wave function, people can prove there's anion quasi-particles, and quasi-particles carry anionic statistics and also carry fractional charge. So this is the first example that we know the quasi-particle excitations could not be described as this fundamental electron quantum number. And we also kind of have this first example tell us there's maybe some more complicated emergent physics at low energy. And this is some experiment device. They realized that the fractional quantum Hall electron in this 2D electron gas. And later, people have some more conjecture about this possible similar phases can be realized in this spin system. So some example is called a frustrated magnets. Basically, it's just a spin system on frustrated lattice geometry. So the the example I showed before is on like a spin system Heisenberg model on this square lattice. But a square lattice, we know there's AB sublattice structure, so we can always have this ordering phases. But on some more complicated lattice geometry like this Kagome or some other frustrated lattice, then maybe there's disorder. So in that case, people have conjecture maybe some spin liquid phase. And also, people believe this spin liquid may be also relevant to the NOAA physics in high TC because that's due to this Anderson's very early conjecture about this RBB picture. Superconductor can be developed from this spin liquid. Okay, so the generic properties of this topological order is that they can have the same symmetry as these order systems. So there's basically no symmetry difference. So symmetry breaking paradigm breaks down here. And the second, there's no long-range correlations. So all the correlations are very local. So it looks like there's everything is just local. There's no any long-range information in the system. But very surprising that people find that the ground state degeneracy can depend on the topology of the space. So that means there's something very non-local because the system can detect the topology of the whole manifold. So for instance, you put the system torus on some sphere, you find different ground state degeneracies. Also, people can prove these ground state degeneracies actually very robust respect to any local perturbation. So that's some non-trivial properties, because in the symmetry breaking phase, if we break in certain symmetry, the phase is not robust at all. But in this case, you can add any perturbation, the system is still very robust. And also, the most non-trivial feature is that the excitations always carry fractional statistics. For a particular of such states with the so-called chiral topological order, for example, for this fractional quantum Hall states, which can break time reversal symmetry, and can also have this universal chiral edge mode, which also protected by topological order, can never be, two-dimension. Here, I just focus on two-dimension. Yeah, but in three-dimension, it's more complicated. Yeah. Okay, so how to describe such kind of states? So the way to understand such kind of phase is actually based on a new class of states, the tensor product states. So let me introduce what is a tensor product state. So let us look at this mean field states in a different perspective. So if we want to write down mean field wave function, actually, we can associate the spin up configuration with all the parameter U up and the spin down configuration with all the parameter U down. And actually, the wave function is just a multiplication of all these U up, U down complex numbers. So basically, in a graph, you can just describe the wave function as such a graph, because on each side, there's no correlations. So this indices can be freely choose up or down. There's no any correlation at all. So basically, this wave function is very easy and very trivial. And a little non-trivial wave function first proposed for one-dimensional system is this so-called matrix product state. And the corresponding density matrix normalization group algorithm turns out to be a magic to handle these one-dimensional strongly correlated systems. And the basic assumption is that the underlying wave function can be write down as a matrix product. So basically, we just extend this complex number into a matrix. So before, this order parameter just a complex number. But now we can associate the spin-up configuration with a matrix AF, and the spin-down configuration associated with a matrix spin A down. Okay, then the wave function, we just doing matrix product. And on the periodic boundary condition, we can further trace this matrix product. Then we get a number. So the number is our wave function. Graphically, we can draw this matrix with the, in such a three leg, because this vertical leg represents this physical degree of freedom. And this horizontal legs represent this internal degree of freedom, because the matrix always have this internal degree of freedom, right? So when we connect these horizontal legs, we mean the sum over the internal degree of freedom. So the equipment is just like a matrix product, because if you product the first to second, it's just a sum over this common index, right? Okay, then the later people generalize such kind of state to high dimension. So the high dimension is also very simple, because you can just think about in one dimension, we only have this left and right direction. But in two dimension or three dimension, we have more spatial directions. So basically, you just introduce some, for example, on square lattice, you can introduce this rank 5 tensor. Again, this vertical indices still represent this physical degree of freedom. But now you have more internal degree of freedom, both on this left, right, and up and down. And then you can diagrammatically draw this wave function just in this way, yeah, because M1, M2, M3, M4 just some physical indices. You just fix the spin configuration for the physical indices. Then you sum over all the internal indices. You can get a complex number. The number is a wave function. So again, here the convention is that if we connect the two leg, we mean the sum over the shared indices. Okay, so there are a few examples that can show that such kind of method is very powerful. So the most famous example is the so-called AQLT state, first proposed in this spin-1 system. As we know, the spin-1 chain can have a non-trivial Haldane phase. So this is the first example that show this Haldane phase actually can be write down in a much simpler way, because we have this usual spin Heisenberg interaction, but we can also add this square interaction, and people can show that they still belong to the same phase. But in this case, this wave function, this Hamiltonian is exactly solvable. And the ground state wave function can be roughly described in this way. We just first prepared some singlet spin 1/2 pairing for each link. Then basically we have two spin 1/2, 1/2 degree on this shared site, right? But then the trick is just we do a projection on this site, because the physical degree space have a three dimension, and have a spin 0 and a plus minus 1. So we just can decompose this 1/2, 1/2 cross 1/2 representation into 0 plus 1 representation. And then we remove this spin 0 sector. Then we can go back to this physical space. So after such a projection, it turns out this is the exact ground state wave function. And also, it can be generalized in high dimension. For instance, this spin 2 model on square lattice. And this is recently also proposed to be used as a universal resources for quantum computing. And for more complicated cases, we can also prove that all the student states, which classify all the non-chiral topological order in two dimension systems, can also be represented in such a tensor product states, and as well as those all very famous Schrodinger RVD states. Okay, so from the informational perspective, we can view this state in a little bit different way, because from the above construction, we show that in this very simple example, we first just prepare some disentangled singlet pair states, right? So which have the maximal entanglement. Then we just apply some projection on this physical side. But in this AQLT state, it's very simple. This just projected to the symmetrical space. So basically just the kind of project out this spin zero channel. But in more general case, this projection can be very general. And we can put the arbitrary projection on the on this site and can prepare many different states. And this internal pair can also be generalized to much more general states, not just the spin one half singlet, but you can think about this qubit singlets can involve many, many degrees of freedoms from one to n. And in that case, once we cut this boundary, we find they are kind of can have some residual entanglement between this yellow part and the rest area. So basically, people understand that basically all those states can satisfy the famous area law. And but from the other quantum conformal field theory and TQFT, people also know that many systems with topological order also satisfy this theory law, but with some universal constant correction, which called this topological entropy. Okay, so from this perspective, we understand such kind of state have the potential to describe this very general universal states. Oh, this alpha just some constant, non-universal constant, but the gamma is a universal constant. So here, universal means in the thermodynamic limit, you need to push this area to be infinite, but the outside also go to infinite. Okay, so then let me briefly describe the algorithm that can efficiently simulate such kind of states. So if we want to calculate the norm, we know that first we have kind of trace over also this physical indices. So for a wave function, we have a single layer with some vertical lag. So the norm is very simple, just kind of you have two layers, but you also sum over the vertical indices. Okay, then in the calculation, we usually can first sum over the physical indices. Then we can combine this up and down lags to be some bigger lag. And for this bigger lag, actually, the dimension becomes d squared if we assume the wave function, the internal dimension is d dimension. And then the norm is just a trace over this uniform tensor net. It's very simple. And very similar to this physical quantities like energy, if we insert some physical operation between these two physical states, between the bra and the cat, right? Then we can have some impurity double tensor. We just need to trace over this double tensor network with some impurities. Okay, but looks like everything is very nice, but it turns out actually the calculation is not easy because people can prove to construct a generic 2D tensor network actually is exponential hard or Sharpe hard problem. This is very unfortunate, and it looks like although this state may have very nice properties, but it's very hard to simulate in realistic system because due to this NP hard problem. So the idea we want to solve this problem actually based on some coarse-grained approach. So this is a very usual and physical considerations because although there's many degrees of freedom in the system, but in the long wavelength limit, we believe we can throw away some local degree of freedom and still keep the universal properties of those states. So the trick here is that we can kind of group several tensors together and get some coarse-grained tensor. But if we just naive do this, combine these two legs, then this internal dimension of this new tensor can become D2 force. And if we do it again and again, it exponentially increases. So the trick is that we want to reduce back to D squared. And we want to make this trace almost the same. So a simple way to implement this actually is very simple. We can just do some so-called singular value decomposition. So the trick is that this rank 4 tensor actually can be viewed as a matrix if we combine this left and up leg, and also combine this down and right leg as the Coulomb, this two leg as a row. So it's basically just like a matrix. Then we can decompose this rank 4 tensor into a summation of two rank 3 tensor. But the key trick here is that we also need to do some approximation here, because if there's no approximation, then typically this rank 4 tensor have the degree of freedom order of D to 8, but if we do this decomposition, become 2 rank 3 tensor, and the degree of freedom here should be order of D to 4. Otherwise, we could not solve the equation. And if we keep D to 4, then if we do again and again, we can first step, we cross-grain the system, the tensor into this tensor. And then we sum over the square, and we cross-grain the tensor. But if we don't do any approximation, this can be, again, exponentially hard, exponentially increasing. And so the, you mean which number? Oh, yeah. This can be exponentially increased if we. The original tensor actually because the original the on this lattice this dimension is fixed. It's just the d square, right? Because the original single tensor. You know the original single tensor have. This internal dimension d, right? So the double tensor just a d square, so it's fixed. But after you cross grain, if we don't want to make any approximation, it can increase. Original one is fixed, yeah. Because it's defined on each side, so it's fixed. It depends on what's the system size. Yeah. So in the simplest case, you can think about just a uniform. On every side, you have the same tensor. But after you cross graining, it should increase if you don't do any approximation. So the key observation is that in this step, we can just do some very simple singular value decomposition because if we found this spectrum of singular value exponential decay, then we can just simply cut this singular tail, the tail of the singular value, and make a very good approximation. So the method first proposed is in this classical system by Michael Levin, and then we generalized to quantum system and efficiently calculated these physical quantities. And recently, and the most important is that for all those topological non-trivial states, actually turns out this is kind of fixed point flow. That means such kind of randomization algorithm can capture the important topological order in those systems. And a much better much better algorithm also has been developed recently, can further improve this accuracy. Okay, then let me show you some very interesting application of this method. So the first application, we always want to check the algorithm that actually is this very simple transverse IC model. So here we just put this inner dimension D equal to 2, so which is minimal inner dimension that's non-trivial than the mean field theory, because mean field theory, you can think about just inner dimension D equal to 1. We go back to this mean field ansatz with described by order parameter. But here, if inner dimension D equal to 2, then we can have 32 variational parameters for this inner dimension D equal to 2 tensor. And then we put the variational parameter in the ansatz and do this simple minimization, and we can find the phase diagram perfectly agree with this quantum Monte Carlo simulation. Basically, the critical point is 3.08, very close to this 3.044 Monte Carlo result. And this exponent beta also very close to the Monte Carlo result, 3.27. Okay, so. Sorry? Yeah. Oh, it's more complicated because in this case you need to contract this 2D tensor net. Each tensor have a dimension like a d square, right? Each leg have dimension d square. But yes, 3, 4, 5. But here you have order of system size, order of n legs. If you need to sum over all those legs, it can be exponentially hard. Yeah. So this is some mathematical proof. Okay, so then let me move on a little bit of non-trivial example. So in this non-trivial example, we can examine this very famous Tory code model. So basically, this model is a spin 1/2 model defined on the link of a square lattice. And basically, we have two terms. So the first term we call this star term, which is a multiplication of 4 sigma z on this vertex. And the second term is the plaquette term, which is a multiplication of 4 sigma x on this plaquette. So basically, one can show that basically these two terms, actually, they are commutative with each other. Because this is very simple, because each plaquette always have overlap two times with this star operator, right? And sigma z, sigma x, they are anti-commute, so overlap two times, they always commute. Okay, then if we want to solve this model, we can first solve the first constraint. First constraint actually requires this multiplication of 4 sigma z always need to be equal to 1. So actually, the constraint can be mapped to some string language. If we map this spin-up configuration to no string, and a spin-down configuration to one string, actually, we can show that if we have a string go through, then such kind of configuration is allowed. But if we have some break string, we always have odd number of spin-down configuration here, so which have cost high energy is not allowed. So basically, we remove these configurations. And in this string picture, the low energy subspace is just described by this closed loop. Okay, then let's test the effect of this second term. So the second term basically just flips spin on the plaquette. So in the string language, you can think about just kind of create a small loop of string in this plaquette. Then we can kind of make this loop have some dynamics. They can become bigger and small, can fluctuate, and the loop number can change. So basically, the wave function is very simple, just equal with the superposition of all possible loop configurations. And such kind of wave function turns out to be non-trivial and very different from the direct product state, because intuitive understanding is that if you put this wave function on a torus, you can have some global loop ramp around the torus, right? But if you just allow this local fluctuation, just means you locally twist the string, locally enlarge or make it small, you can never annihilate this global loop on the torus. So basically, there can be four the ground state degenerated on the torus, because you can either have one global loop on this direction or no global loop and similar on the other direction. Okay, then we can further prove that the quasi particle carry this fractional statistics. And for a more generic model, actually more interesting is that we turn on this Zeeman term, because this model is exact soluble, so it's very trivial. And everything is well studied. But if we add this term, the model actually is not so easy to solve, because this term not commute with these terms. Okay, so basically, if this term, the magnetic field is very large, we can think about everything is just polarized. So in the polarized picture, means there's no string at all. So basically, and they have very few loops. But in this unpolarized state, if we remove this state, we go back to this string condensation picture. So basically, we can expect there should be some transition between this small loop configuration and the large loop configurations. But it's very hard to describe such kind of phase transitions in the mean field framework, because basically there's no difference of symmetry on the two sides. But is there better method? The answer is yes, and we can use the so-called tensor product states to study such kind of phase transition. Okay, so let me show you how to construct a tensor for such kind of loop condensation states. Basically, because this lattice model is defined on the link of this square model, so basically we can just have two sets of tensors. We first have a rank 2 tensor G on this link, because it have two legs connected to their neighbors, and also have a rank 4 tensor T. Okay, so the G is very simple. So the G, just the 0, 0 component, G is two-dimensional matrix. Just the G up, just 0, 0 equal to 1, and G down, just 1, 1 equal to 1. So basically, this is a very simple matrix. It's just a projection. It projects this spin up space to a spin up configuration to no string. So 0 can be viewed as the number of string, and a spin down configuration to one string, just to realize the projection I mentioned before. And then in this T, which also is a rank 4 tensor, but with dimension 2, the alpha, beta, gamma, delta can be 0 or 1. So the constraint is that if the summation of alpha beta gamma delta even is equal to 1, otherwise it's zero, vanish. Then if we just simply do this tensor trace for this T and G, trace means if they share the common leg, we just sum over the common indices. So in such tensor trace wave function, we simply describe this equal with the superposition of all possible loop configurations. If they don't form a loop, the amplitude just vanish. And such kind of wave function is very useful to study this low-lying dynamics for the corresponding Hamiltonian. And if we simulate this such kind of variational wave function in some tensor network states, with five parameters, we can get a very good phase diagram compatible with the Bessemer color results. Okay, so this spin model, I show you still have the comparison with this Mercalli results, but I just want to convince you that this method is valid. Then I want to turn on those non-trivial models can never be simulated by any Mercalli simulation. Okay, so the most challenging model we want to face is this Fermanic model. But there's a little bit of subtlety for this Fermanic model because the direct implementation actually is very hard. We can think about the problem in the following way. In a Fermanic system, usually we need to order in the basis, right, in some particular order. If you want to describe some fermion states, you want to order in the lattice with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because you want to write down these fork states. Fork states need to some particular ordering. Okay, if we order the states, actually we find that this fermion hopping term actually is non-local, because once we order in these states, and if we have if we use the 1 to label there's one fermion, 0 and label there's no fermion. And then if there's a vertical hopping here, then this hopping can have a plus or minus sign, depending on whether on this path there's even number of fermion or odd number of fermion. So basically, if we map this fermion model into any spin model, it turns out all the terms, those local hopping, actually is non-local. And again, if we naively just write on such kind of tensor product wave function, with this zero describe no fermion and one describe one fermion, I can show actually this is not a valid fermionic wave function, because in a fermionic wave function, we need to specify this ordering of the basis, right? But in this simple bosonic tensor wave function, there's no such kind of ordering specification, because it doesn't matter how you order in the tensors, finally you get the same wave function. And it's very hard to incorporate with this fermion ordering properties. So a much better way, actually, is to generate the tensor product wave function to Grassmann value the tensor product wave function. So let me show you how to define a fermionic wave function. Basically, we need to first fix some ordering for this fork basis. And then we can overlap this fork basis with any fermionic states. Then we get this fermionic wave function. But of course, this fermionic wave function depends on how we specify the ordering of the basis. Okay, so the generalization is very simple. We just assume this internal dimension A, B, C have this parity odd or parity even indices. And with parity odd indices, we always associate with some Grassmann of theta. So this is 0 or 1, just this parity quantum number of the corresponding indices A, B, C. So for example, for this honeycomb lattice, we can, because they are AB sublattice, we can introduce two sets of Grassmann tensors, one on A sublattice, one on B sublattice. And also, we need to generate this canonical delta function, which perform as a metric in the tensor contraction to generate to this Grassmann version. And if there's with odd parity associated with some D theta, right? Then we can simply kind of doing this Grassmann integral of this theta and d theta. Then we can have some wave function. And this wave function have very nice properties, because if we input this parity conservation condition, because if M describes one fermion, then this T always can contain odd number of Grassmann number. Then if you reordering those tensors, you can get this consistent fermion sign. And the randomization group algorithm can be generated to fermionic systems corresponding. It turns out all the calculations here are still local calculation and very efficient. Let me just show you some very simple example. So the most simple example is this fermion, again, this free fermion problem, because we want to check the algorithm. So this is just a free fermion hopping on this honeycomb lattice, a free fermion pairing problem on the honeycomb lattice. Because we just want to check the algorithm, we ignore this hopping. We just assume there's one pairing term. Okay, when mu is non-zero, then this obvious Fermionic system with a gap, and it turns out even the inner dimension d equal to 2 can describe the system pretty well with the error bar less than 0.4% in energy. And if we tune this mu equal to 0, actually it's simply describe this graphene physics, because on this Heineken lattice, we have this particle hole symmetry. So this fermion hopping term can always map through this fermion parent term if when mu equal to 0. So basically, mu equal to 0, this just describe this graphene without any interaction. So it's a direct fermion. It's actually non-trivial. But it turns out if we enlarge this d equal to 4, actually can also describe this system pretty well. At least the energy is very close to this true ground state. But because this is just a bilinear fermion problem, so we can always diagnose them in K spaces, so we can compare with the exact result. But this is the inner dimension of the tensor, just as I introduced it before, internal dimension of tensor. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I changed D, just to change the variational parameter. So this D kind of some variational parameter, because you have a larger D, you have more variational parameters. You can systematically improve your ansatz. Okay, so finally, let me show you this non-trivial application on TJ model. Okay, so this is a very famous TJ model, but now we study a problem on this very specific Heineken geometry, not on the square geometry. And we can compare the energy to those exact diagonalization and the DMRG calculation on small clusters, which is the exact calculation. And it shows that if we systematically increase this D, actually the ground state energy systematically converges to this exact results. And we also calculate this magnetization as a function of doping. So this axis is doping, and this is the energy. It shows that like up to D equal to 12, this magnetization, stagger magnetization dies around 10%. And at half filling, our results have a very controlled calculation because the energy almost exactly the same as quantum Mercator calculation. And this magnetization can be slightly higher than this quantum Mercator calculation. But if we want to further increase this D, finally we can recover this quantum Mercator results. But here, we don't think this is an important point because they already belong to the same phase. So the numerical accuracy here is not important. The importance is whether we can find new phases or not. Okay, so this is a magnetization as a function of doping that we, in our calculation, compare to this final size calculation derived by DMRG and ED. And we show the tendency actually is consistent with the final size calculation. And if we make some extrapolation from final size calculation, the tendency is kind of consistent. Okay, then we want to ask, is this model a superconductor at finite doping? And if we calculate this superconducting ordering order parameter, it turns out it is a superconductor. And actually, this superconductor is highly non-trivial because if we calculate the pairing phase along three different bonds, we find there's a non-trivial 2 pi over 3 phase difference. So this can be plus or minus 2 pi over 3 for this phase. So basically, it's a chiral superconductor. So in the superconductor language, sometimes we can call it a D plus ID if the pairings exist in singlet channel. But at half filling, around half filling, not far away from half filling, because we find always the coexist with the antiferromagnetic ordering. So it can also induce the component of triplet pairing. So basically, there's a mixing phase of singlet triplet pairing and antiferromagnets. And such kind of mixing was not observed on the square lattice TJ model and any high TC compounds because the lattice geometry here is very important, because for this Heineken lattice or the lattice described the graphene, we have two atoms per unit cell. So basically, this antiferromagnetic ordering don't break translational symmetry, which is compatible with the superconducting ordering. That's why we can get a coexisting phase. And such kind of situations could not never be happen on a square lattice because the antiferromagnetic ordering do break translational invariance there. So that's why the physicals still can be a little bit different. And here on this Heineken lattice, possible competing orders also very few possible competing order because the stripe, you know, yeah, the most possible competing order on the square lattice is this stripe ordering, right? But on Heineken, because you have some curve in the lattice geometry, so it's very hard to stabilize the stripe. And also because the lattice is kind of very dilute, so it's also not favor this CDW ordering. So here we believe our result can be very possible to be realized in real material if there exists such kind of material. So one possible material I want to show you actually is this so-called indium vanadium copper oxide material. So basically, this material have indium vanadium insulated layer, but this active layer describes this copper and have an indium oxide insulating layer, and the active layer is this copper vanadium oxide layer. So basically, this vanadium and the copper form this triangular lattice, and the vanadium sit at the hexagon center, and then there's some oxygen between them, oxide between them. Okay, so basically, this model, because vanadium have 5 plus, and there's no spin on it, and the copper is 1/2 spin. So basically, the model people believe can be roughly described as a 1/2 Heisenberg model on Heineken lattice. And experimentally, people already observed this anti-ferromagnetic ordering on this specific material. And now, if we can dope the system, introduce some charge, introduce some holes in the system, we predict such kind of chiral superconductivity may exist on such kind of lattice. And more interesting, if we can add pressure in such kind of system, then we can possible to tune this Hubbard U, because here we observe the anti-ferromagnetic ordering means the Hubbard U actually pretty strong. It's a molten insulator. But if we can softening this Hubbard U, then maybe we can even observe this spin liquid. Okay, so finally, let me just give you some summaries and possible future directions. And so the main talk, the main information I want to give you is that actually this Grassmann value tensor product state is very general for strongly correlating systems. It can capture the very simple symmetry breaking order, but it can also capture this non-trivial non-chiral topological order and chiral topological order. But it's, so far, it's not very clear whether chiral topological order have a finite dimensional Grassmann tensor product state description or not. But recently, there's a paper that at least we can use this Grassmann tensor product to simulate physical quantities for such kind of chiral states. So basically, the whole algorithm kind of can be enable us to simulate all these non-trivial phases in two-dimensional strongly correlated system. And the essential way actually enable us to do any efficient simulation is based on this RG concept. And some non-trivial chiral superconductor was predicted in certain systems. And we're also doing some simulation on TJ model on square lattice and possible to possible to recover the mysteries for these specific models. And more interesting that the Grassmann generalization for tensor product states actually is the first attempt for this algebraic generalization of tensor network. So if we put other more general algebraic elements on a tensor, maybe we can end up with some very interesting states. And the implementation may be in particle physics, since there are also many particle physicists here. So I think maybe also can help us to understand the physics in QCD. And more interesting, if I believe there can be some relationship even with quantum gravity, because in the loop quantum gravity, people use this spin network to describe those loop space. But we can also generalize like a Grassmann network and a more general algebraic network. Maybe help us to understand the quantum geometry. Thanks.
Did I understand correctly that this is basically all at zero temperature? You're putting in a variational wave function and looking to minimize the energy?
Yeah.
So what if you wanted to do this at non-zero temperature? Is there some sort of...
At a non-zero temperature, there can be some excitations. But in principle, we believe at a low temperature, the physics is kind of controlled by zero temperature. So at this stage, we want to first understand the phase diagram, and later we can generalize to finite temperature. In principle, the algorithm can also simulate finite temperature. problems. Because all the algorithms, we use the so-called imaginary time evolution method to get ground state. So in principle, the imaginary time evolution can also simulate finite temperature properties. Yeah.
So do you think that the high temperature superconductors mm-hmm. can be treated as if they were at low temperature? I mean, is that a good approximation? You started uh-huh. with the problem of the high TC superconductor.
Yeah, but high TC just means the transition temperature is high, but of course it's more stable at low temperature. The high temperature superconductor means it's a stable phase at zero temperature.
Yeah. So you showed us that with the tensor product states, you can see the phase diagram of the lattice at 2-gauge theory, right?
Yeah.
But can you do that also with a transverse field that does not commute with the
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, Xie did the work maybe 1 year ago, but never got it published. You can ask her. Actually, we added this both sigma x and sigma y. But so now we also want to try add sigma z, maybe more.
Exactly. Can you do it with the three-dimensional phase?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We actually have this very nice two-dimensional phase diagram consistent with this Monte Carlo simulation. We got some phase diagram like this. There's some. If we have two transverse two coupling hx and hy. Mm-hmm. Then we get some two-dimensional phase. This is the second-order phase transition, and end up with some first-order phase transition. So basically, this is some Z2 phase, and this is some polarized phase, confinement phase. So the phase diagram basically consistent with the Monte Carlo simulation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Can you also do the three-dimensional with Y, X, and Z, or three?
Oh, yeah. We try to do Z, but Z turns out a little bit hard. We need to design the answers carefully and to avoid missing any important physics. Yeah.
Any more questions?
Oh, my idea is that basically here we develop some efficient simulation for this NP hard problem, but basically it's kind of alternative way to simulate this Slater determinant, because basically the wave function is kind of some Slater determinant, right, for fermionic systems. But here we can use some randomization algorithm that efficient at a very large scale Slater determinant, so maybe it can help for this QCD problem. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because here we do this imaginary time evolution, so in principle we can also do real time evolution. Yeah, so in principle the algorithm have no intrinsic technical problem. Yeah.
Any more questions? Anyone else? So let's thank the speaker.